WZH 910 AM, W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. A wildfire emergency in Southern California.
New evacuation orders east of Los Angeles as the Line Fire burns out of control in San Bernardino County, threatening some 36,000 homes, businesses, and buildings.
More than 12,000 people have already been ordered to flee. Thousands more told to be ready here in San Bernardino County as the fire continues to spread.
ABC's Mola Lange. In Orange County, the airport fires exploded to 2,000 acres. Mandatory evacuations now in place. The showdown between former President Trump and VP Kamala Harris less than 24 hours away. A third of polled voters say they want to hear more from Harris before they vote. An urgent manhunt for a highway sniper suspect in Kentucky. Five people wounded on an interstate there after police say he shot at passing vehicles. During a speech today, North Korean leader Kim Jong-un citing what he calls a grave threat from the U.S., saying his nation will work to exponentially increase the number of nuclear weapons that the country has. This is ABC News. Two California men are accused of running online white supremacist forums with the goal of creating a race war.
Federal prosecutors allege Dallas Humber and Matthew Allison inspired their online followers to carry out attacks in Slovakia and Turkey. Real life, deadly consequences. The two allegedly had a group they called Terrorgram on encrypted social media sites urging followers to carry out terror attacks and assassinate high-profile people to be in turn named as saints, all to incite a race war. Matt Olson is Assistant Attorney General for National Security.
Racially motivated, violent extremism.
Alex Stone, ABC News.
Michigan Supreme Court today ruled Robert F. Kennedy Jr. will remain on the state's ballot in November. Kennedy sued to remove his name after he suspended his campaign and endorsed former President Donald Trump. Michigan Secretary of State appealed a lower court ruling that allowed Kennedy to remove his name from the ballot. Dave Packer, ABC News.
Travel back in time and experience the magic of the Minnesota Renaissance Festival. Journey through a world of armored knights, joking jesters, and enchanting fair maidens. Every weekend, August 17th through September 29th, thrill to live combat jousting, feasting on turkey legs, and shopping hundreds of unique artisans. Bring the whole family for unforgettable fun. Get your discounted tickets today at renaissancefest.com. Find your magic at the Minnesota Renaissance Festival.
I'm James Kelly with WBZH News. Your news roundup in quick podcast form. Find it anytime on the WBZH website at buzzofthenorth.com.
Travel back in time and experience the magic of the Minnesota Renaissance Festival. Journey through a world of armored knights, joking jesters, and enchanting fair maidens. Every weekend, August 17th through September 29th, thrill to live combat jousting, feasting on turkey legs, and shopping hundreds of unique artisans. Bring the whole family for unforgettable fun. Get your discounted tickets today at renaissancefest.com. Find your magic at the Minnesota Renaissance Festival.
Civic Media News, I'm Derek Tritz. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Two new polls show a tight presidential race in Wisconsin. Terry Bell reports.
The CBS News YouGov poll finds 51% of likely voters favor Kamala Harris, while 49% back Donald Trump. Meanwhile, consulting firm Platform Communications finds Harris leading Trump with likely Wisconsin voters 48% to 45%. I'm Terry Bell.
Both polls put Harris's lead inside the margin of error. Democratic vice presidential nominee Tim Walz returns to Wisconsin later this week. Walz will appear at different political events in Wausau on Friday night, then stump in Superior on Saturday afternoon. Walz spoke at Milwaukee's Labor Fest on Labor Day. Donald Trump spoke to a rally in central Wisconsin over the weekend. And that's what you need to know. I'm Derek Tritz, and this is Civic Media News.
The Brewers get set to head west. Hi, I'm Jimmy Cusco with Sports, filling in for Mike Clemens. After dropping two of three games to the Rockies and having won just twice in the past seven games, manager Pat Murphy said that the team is going through some growing pains.
They could be tired. They can be feeling it. They can be trying not to, you know, they can be trying too hard. You know, a lot of young players still in there. We had five, most of our lineup are basically first-year guys.
Milwaukee will set out on a six-game road trip out west beginning tomorrow in San Francisco. They'll play Arizona this weekend. The Brewers are still 9 games up in the NL Central with 19 games to play. On Sunday, it'll be the Green Bay Packers taking on the Indianapolis Colts as each team seeks its first victory. For the Packers, they will be without Jordan Love, who is expected to miss at least 3 weeks with an MCL sprain. Malik Willis, who the Packers traded for in the preseason, will start this week's game. The Athletic reports that Green Bay has reached out to free agent quarterback Ryan Tannehill as well. Filling in for Mike Clemens, I'm Jimmy Cuska with Civic Media Sports.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly clear tonight, a low in the upper 50s. More sun than clouds with a slight sprinkle or shower chance tomorrow. High low 80s. Mostly sunny in mid 80s on Wednesday. Humidity levels stay down, but it heats up again on Thursday. Mid 80s and sun. Currently it's 59 degrees.
Pat Kreitlow.
Tuesday morning, Hans Breitenmoser helps us with a little manure 101. There's a lot to know about finding the right balance between good crops and dirty water.
Up North News with Pat Kreitlow. Weekday mornings starting at 6.
You're listening to the Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's home for Matinee on Air.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
This is Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Here are your hosts, Dr. Tim Slecker and Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, educated educators talking education.
Oh, yes, it is. Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education, special Labor Day edition. Johnny Lupinacci, I know you're loving this Labor Day, my friend. It is special. Like you said, blue collar scholars, we like to identify ourselves as, and that whole idea of connection to union. I know you've talked about your father. I talk about my father too. My father working for U.S. Steel all those years in Pittsburgh as a union member. I know you talk about your father being working in the Detroit area.
Well, yeah, dude, I'm a child of Detroit. So, I mean, every grown person that went to work was card carrying. I mean, that's Detroit. Detroit is union proud. There was nothing in the Metro Detroit area that isn't tied to the automotive industry. And I mean that very, like, there are things, but especially in the era, Tim, you and I were growing up.
Right.
Everything was connected in some capacity to labor in the big three, as they called it. And we're talking about ground zero for so many different labor organizing, you know, the UAW, right? The Teamsters, all those folks. And so that trickled into, you know, teacher union history. We'll get into that today, because Chicago teachers, you could be listening. And
yeah,
whether you're in Madison or whether you're in Milwaukee or whether you're, you know, anywhere in the Midwest, really, we all know we have OG roots in the union, blue collar to the core. I mean, it's they call it Rust Belt cities for a reason. Right? And so, you know, it's a sandpaper finish. We grew up with unions in pretty much every industry. And sometimes we forget about how important they are. So when we're talking about labor and we're celebrating a day where we're, you know, but honoring the hard work that folks in this country do. And we think about those working conditions and how important historically and right now unions are, not only to teaching, but to labor in general. So, right. Yeah, I mean, you know, like, it doesn't get, you don't grow up in Detroit and not be part of a union, you know, understanding the importance of a union. And when we think about, like, really historically, the burgeoning, the growth of working class to middle class, and like these kinds of things, like having weekends to be able to do things, like having, you know, conversations around employers providing healthcare, time off, these important parts of our everyday life. You know, we often don't necessarily remember that they wouldn't be there without unions.
They wouldn't be there. And that's, you know, you talk about that too, you in Detroit and then me growing up in Pittsburgh, actually growing up in Homestead, Pennsylvania. If you look at that, you want to talk about a labor union movement and the start of that in the 1870s, probably one of the, you know, most violent outbreaks. You know, workers in the Homestead U.S. Steelworks walked out. And at that point, then we're confronted by the Pinkerton men. And for days, this was a violent, bloody conflict that left steelworkers, residents of the town of Homestead, dead. So you're thinking about that. It's like, wait a minute, what's at stake here? How do we get to a day where we absolutely take a day, take a breath and relax and say, whoa, labor? Understand, Johnny, you're saying the hard fought position, the sacrifice that many men and women have made to get us to this point is to realize that. So it just, you know, again, that history, you know, growing up in Homestead, that is one of the things you walk around down there and see, the history of the slaughter of United States steelworkers from the Homestead work by the Pinkerton men, one of those first bloody labor conflicts.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. The hard fought labor wars that often don't get covered in history when we're teaching. So big things, big day to celebrate. Hopefully you're hoisting them up high with your neighbors, with your people, and you're able to relax a little bit today. I know even though it's a holiday, it's still a work day for so many people. Right. And so we have to be thinking about that context. And that's why we're doing the show today, Tim. I mean, right. Like, let's keep the work going.
We're working, man, on this day. You know, well, I mean, we're not technically working on this day. It's a pre-record. Yeah, we'll let you in on the secret here.
Oh, Tim, come on, man. I'm pretending it's Monday already.
It's Monday. No, but, you know, but here's the thing, though, Johnny. You know, how do we make these Labor Days work? It's like this. You know, you put in the effort. And again, Labor Day, Johnny, reminding people, too. It's like, is this only about unions? No, this is about workers, labor. And yes, Johnny Lupinacci and Tim Slecker are going to come at this from a union standpoint because we have union roots in our family. And then also our own connections, Johnny, as you said, you know, me as a teacher, teachers union, growing up with a family of teachers and watching too, one of the biggest teacher strikes of the mid 1970s, my aunt and a bunch of family members were in one of the longest teacher strikes ever at that point in the 1970s.
Well, and I was going to say, Tim, we'll get into it today because I get a little bitter sometimes when teachers identify as white collar. And this is, again, what we emphasize, like blue collar scholar. It's like teaching work is labor work and has a long labor history, a hard fought labor history, underwritten by big labor organizations, right? The AFT's early days of organizing after hours through the UAW. Right. And where did teachers' unions start?
Yeah.
Chicago, right? Margaret Haley, one of the first teachers back in the day when essentially if you were a teacher, you were kind of like a head of schoolhouse. You were female. You didn't have children. There was no retirement and you likely lived at a school. It's almost like becoming a priest or a nun. So becoming a teacher previous to Margaret Haley and the teacher unions in this country meant usually you were a young woman, right? Mm-hmm. Highly feminized career. This is pre-normal schools, that kind of stuff. We're talking about really, turn of the century times when kids in the Chicago factory school communities, right? Were going to a schoolhouse or a local school and teachers like Margaret Haley in Chicago were teaching them while there was not really good pay for those teachers. In fact, they were given housing, like sometimes like room and board and very little pay, no savings, no retirement. And the idea was if you were a woman in those times and, you know, I don't share these beliefs. Tim doesn't share these beliefs. Jess certainly doesn't share those beliefs. I mean, we got two pro-feminist men and a feminist producer here, but the idea was back then is they really thought if you were a woman, your job was to either take on some kind of service role as like a nurse or a teacher in community till you had children or you were married and then you were head of household. And so like, and what I mean by head of household is not like decision maker, or, you know, or money maker. It was raising children, right? It was cooking, cleaning. It was
feminizing the labor of the house.
Boom. Mm-hmm. Exactly. So, you know, Margaret Haley and the original, you know, teacher union teachers of Chicago schools said, hey, guess what? We've got to really figure out how to come together and stand up against what things, Tim, we're still talking about today. like the factory saying, you know what, our kids don't really need to learn this political purpose for education. They don't need to learn to be democratic citizens. They need to learn to be good workers. And in fact, just teach them until they're old enough to be either one, having children and in the home, or two, getting into the factory and working. And great teachers like Margaret Haley, I'm summarizing a lot, but great teachers like Margaret Haley said, no, we got to stand up to this corporate curriculum, to these factories telling us, to factory owners telling us what to do. And you know what? Labor families, factory workers supported that. And the teacher said, Margaret Haley, you're going to have to leave teaching. You're going to have to be head of the union. You're going to have to help us unionize, and we're going to organize, and we're going to make this a career. We're going to make this something that our labor is recognized and valued, so that collectively we have a voice to stand up to interests that want children, especially working class children in those factory communities, to only be ready to teach in factories, right? And so back then, those folks, those owners of factories and different things, especially in Chicago, we know about the Industrial Revolution of North America, right? That era, they were saying, hey, you know what? Just prepare these kids to work. And that's all they need to do. If they're women, prepare them to be in homes. And if they're, you know, male, then you just prep them for listening to their boss and getting this factory work done. Well, great teachers like Margaret Haley and her crew said, no way. In fact, we have a lot of really important things. These kids have dreams. They have aspirations. Their families are working really hard. They should be able to, you know, choose pathways in a democracy, practice liberty and freedom, right? And
have
through education, through education, elevate, right? Economically, socially, in all these ways. And so it's really important, especially on a Labor Day. I mean, even more so on May Day, we'll get to that. We'll do a special May Day show, but on Labor Day, especially to say like, hey, teachers, we've got a lot of remembering and honoring of unions to do. And sometimes Tim, it comes to bring it back first circle before we go into break. You know, that's where my bitterness comes, is every state, well, not every state, but pretty close to it, has a labor association. It's not even the Labor Association, Wisconsin Educators Association, Michigan Educators Association, all around. They had this real push to distance ourselves from working class, saying we're not blue collar, we're white collar. Well, guess what? We don't get paid white collar. We don't have white collar conditions, and we don't have white collar political power. Mm-hmm. We are blue collar teacher. I mean, own it, be proud, right? Teachers are blue collar workers.
And there's more, and there's more power. As you talk, you know, talking about powers, we're coming into that. I'm sorry, identifying truly in that blue collar, the struggle. There's just a lot of power there. I get the whole idea about trying to identify as white collar again.
Well, I get it, Tim. The dang Marxists, and I'll come down hard on them all the time. You know, they're like Johnny and Tim, we're radical, but you know what? I don't care for the Marxists very much at all. And I'll tell you, they are right on with supporting unions. I'm right there with them. But here's what they wanted to do, is they wanted to seize power on the factory floor, right? And that happens in the classroom. So they thought empowering teachers was through partnering with universities, right? Making it a degreed program. And I agree with that. Sure. But then identifying with white collar to get into that political power that white collar work has in legislation. And guess what? It was a glass ceiling for teachers. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Labor. Yeah, it's Labor Day. Tune in. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
I learned patience from my adoptive dad. All he had to say was,
hey, you got this. Just breathe. Hey. We're pretty good.
Yeah.
Might have to start a band.
I got it.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more. This message is brought to you by AdoptUSKids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Today's U.S. Bowling League Day. I am not in a bowling league. I think that would actually be kind of fun.
Oh, yeah.
I do like to bowl. But
you got the bowling shirt going on tonight there, Pete.
I do have the bowling shirt. In case the game breaks out, I'm ready. Because I was raised, I'm a street bowler, Chris. I'm ready in case a game breaks out. It could happen.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
You're listening to the Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Oh, there it is.
Yep.
Busted pencils, fully leaded. Education talk, educated educators talking education. We don't want you to die, though. Hey, happy Labor Day. Celebrating here. Here it is. Johnny and Tim owning that blue-collar scholar label today, or title, whatever you want to put it through. But, Johnny, you know, a little bit of our own roots in, you know, yours in Detroit, mine in Pittsburgh, you with the auto workers, me with the steel workers, and realizing, you know, too, coming into this Labor Day. And then both of us as educators, and my first teachers union, 1990 in Southern Virginia. I got that little pull from the side going, have you joined the teachers union yet? And in Southern Virginia in the early 90s, there were no local state affiliated teacher union, only a connection to the national union. At that time, it was AFT.
That's right.
No, there to this day in Virginia, that if you want to join, there are no local teachers unions because of still looking at these laws. Think about that, right? Creating laws that forbid people from this is why I always like to take union, hanging out together so that together we can make decisions and asks of our employers to do the right thing by us. We're going to outlaw that. And in fact, I know all the listeners in Wisconsin are going to be like, oh yeah, Act 10, man, Act 10.
Well, absolutely.
You know, the crowning kind of like moment of going, we are going to literally outlaw what we call collective bargaining. And in fact, I'd say this is one of the reasons Act 10 was actually put together, a lot of the kind of groundwork that put together Busted Pencils, because it was at that time where when that happened in Madison, Wisconsin, I was doing some smaller radio and a colleague in the Madison area asked me to do some commentary and just kind of came on and was like, tell me about this collective bargaining. I was like, yeah, I said, it's really interesting because your state now has outlawed the ability for organizations to ask for better wages and better compensation or better, the ability to ask. Again, collective bargaining was no guarantee of raises, but we literally outlawed the ability to ask.
Well, and Tim, you know, that's similar as a Detroit teacher, as AFT. Because the Michigan Educators Association is you can belong to it, but it's not the official union of Detroit Public Schools. That's the AFT, the American Federation of Teachers, which has grown so much, and we couldn't be more excited. You can listen back to previous show. We had current president Randy Weingarten on from the AFT talking about the exciting growth of the AFT, not only the union for so many teachers around this country, but also the second largest union for nurses. And those, I brought that, bring that up intentionally because at the beginning of the show, I talked a little bit about the history of teacher unions and Margaret Haley and the feminized labor of teaching, right? And that history of nursing and teaching are akin to that and that work, right? Care work in our communities, absolutely essential. We saw that during COVID,
yeah, we did.
Essential workers, right? And thinking about that, We often think about unions in those times like you're talking about, and certainly important is collective bargaining when we talk about wages and we talk about those kinds of things like our schedules and whatnot. But even more so in a big picture, I love like 10,000 foot view, right? Unions aren't perfect. They're not only to ask for things. They're an insurance that there is like really healthy communication between labor and sometimes the interests of profiteers or owners of companies or organizations or political leaders who have power that's centralized away from the masses, the stakeholders, the people in the trenches, those trenches for education being classrooms.
Yeah.
So they're a mechanism of practicing democracy within the trade, right? And that's extended whether you were, and so my first experience, right, with unions besides being a kid in union families, right? Like why weren't we reading the newspaper? Well, the newspaper was on strike, right? So the writers of the Free Press were striking. And so we weren't supporting the newspaper until they had arrived at fair labor conditions for their writers, for the photographers, for the people who delivered the newspaper, all those things. That was similar around food. The Teamsters, right? The trucks that bring our foods in, the farmers that grow the crops that sustain our health, right? All of these things collectively contribute to a state of well-being in our country. And so growing up, there were always strikes and boycotts, and we understood solidarity more than just about when we ask for more money, right? That's a intentional emphasis that like media puts on this, that, you know, it's a political spin out there. I'll say it's propaganda. It's anti-union propaganda because it is in every way how we talk about how together in a democracy, we support one another. And so it is really interconnected. And that's easy to experience growing up as a kid. But, you know, my first job's bagging groceries, right, at a local grocery store. You were in a union. 15 years old with my working permit, right? I was part of a union. You got a card, like Tim said, hanging out. You went to union meetings. You had a union rep, somebody who came through and checked in with all of us kids who were collecting carts, right? Bagging groceries, carrying them out to cars, stuff like that, getting nostalgic about, you know, my early 90s employment. But it was across the board, all these different levels. And then as a teacher, as a student teacher, someone becoming a teacher, you joined the MEA for legal representation should you need it, right? You were now part of an association that made sure they had your back. And in return, the only ask was do the very best by your profession. Go out and do good work. And part of that, this is the part, Tim, that blue collar scholars, I want to emphasize, part of that original back in the day agreement with Margaret Haley and the very first teacher unions were to say, the UAW said, guess what? We got your back. You want to organize AFT after hours? We got an office. Come use our office. We're doing a lot of labor organizing around United Auto Workers, but we have phones. We have offices you can use after hours when we're not at them. You can use those to organize your union. In fact, if you strike, we can't go to work. If we strike, please support our strikes and understand the only thing we're asking. And this is, you can get into the archives. I'm lucky to have studied this. It's like we talk about being blue collar scholars, right? You can go into the archives at Wayne State University Library. It is the archive for labor history. And the only ask, the actual conversation was, teach our children about the importance of unions and about the importance of working hard in your community, right? So, Tim, we'll get back into that. OG agreements, a memo of understanding between teachers and auto workers and all kinds of laborers.
Busted pencils, fully leaded, education talk. A lot more about Labor Day coming up.
The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
ABC News, I'm Dave Packer. A wildfire emergency in Southern California.
New evacuation orders east of Los Angeles as the Line Fire burns out of control in San Bernardino County, threatening some 36,000 homes, businesses, and buildings.
More than 12,000 people have already been ordered to flee. Thousands more told to be ready here in San Bernardino County as the fire continues to spread.
ABC's Mola Lange. In Orange County, the airport fire has exploded to 2,000 acres. Mandatory evacuations now in place. The showdown between former President Trump and Veep Kamala Harris, less than 24 hours away. A third of polled voters say they want to hear more from Harris before they vote. An urgent manhunt for a highway sniper suspect in Kentucky. Five people wounded on an interstate there after police say he shot at passing vehicles. During a speech today, North Korean leader Kim Jong-un citing what he calls a grave threat from the U.S., saying his nation will work to exponentially increase the number of nuclear weapons that the country has. This is ABC News.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
Civic Media News, I'm Derek Tritz. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Some Wisconsin-raised eggs are subject to a recall. Here's Savannah Tomei Olson.
The Salmonella outbreak has gotten more than 60 people sick, and Centers for Disease Control and Prevention staff say these eggs came from a Wisconsin farm. Officials say they're from Milo's Poultry Farm in Bonduelle, that's north of Green Bay. The cartons were sold in Wisconsin, Illinois, and Michigan under the labels Milo's Poultry Farms or Tony's Fresh Market. I'm Savannah Tomei Olson.
Democrats are literally going to new heights to warn about the Heritage Foundation's Project 2025. Airplanes pulled banners over college football games here in Wisconsin and in other key swing states on Saturday. Donald Trump denies having a direct connection to Project 2025, but he's embraced some of its key ideas, like eliminating the Federal Department of Education. And that's what you need to know. I'm Derek Tritz, and this is Civic Media News.
This is your hometown radio, Refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Eminem fans take note, the rapper will open the Video Music Awards. Eminem is nominated for 8 awards. On his last VMA appearance, he shared the stage with Snoop Dogg in 2022. The last time he opened the VMAs was 2010. Deadline reports that if Eminem wins even one of his 8 nominations, that would make him the most decorated male Video Music Award artist in history. He has a total of 67 nominations, which is second only to Madonna. The Video Music Awards will be broadcast Wednesday, September 11th at 7 p.m. Central on the MTV networks. There is nothing like a good snubbing. In this year's Country Music Awards, Morgan Wallen leads the field with 7 nominations, 4 for an album called I Had Some Help, on which he collaborated with Post Malone. Notably absent from the CMA nominees was Beyoncé for her album Cowboy Carter. Cowboy Carter was number 1 on the country charts for 4 weeks. The 58th annual CMA Awards will air November 20th on ABC. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. A few high clouds gathering in the overnight as temperatures tumble into the middle 50s. We'll have a light south breeze. On Tuesday, partly cloudy skies, a few showers, perhaps a rumble of thunder in the afternoon. South winds gusting between 20 and 25, highs in the lower 80s. It's 57 at our studios.
How serious is youth vaping? Irreversible lung damage serious? 1 in 10 kids vape serious? Which warrants a serious conversation from a serious parental figure, like yourself. Not the seriously know-it-all sports dad, or the seriously smart podcaster. It requires a serious conversation that is best had by you. No, seriously. The best person to talk to your child about vaping is you. To start the conversation, visit talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Today's U.S. Bowling League Day. I am not in a bowling league. I think that would actually be kind of fun.
Oh, yeah.
I do like to bowl. But
you got the bowling shirt going on tonight there, Pete.
I do have the bowling shirt. In case the game breaks out, I'm ready. Because I was raised, I'm a street bowler, Chris. I'm ready in case a game breaks out. It could happen.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, she is running in Wisconsin's 18th Senate District. Kristen Alfheim joins us at 11:06. We'll hear what she's hearing about on the campaign trail. Don't miss it.
Matt and Air on Air, weekday mornings at 10.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
There it is. Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. Yeah. Civic Media, make sure you're out there. Hey, you're listening. It's Labor Day. Go out and find a union member. Thank them for this day. You know, need to put out the thanks where it really is. Johnny, we've been, you know, sharing our own memories of, you know, first of all, our early family connections to the unions in Pittsburgh and Detroit, and then our first, you know, working days as teachers and being in the teachers union. I said I was in Southern Virginia, where the local teachers union just didn't exist, and the only way you could get a union connection was joining the national teachers union because the locals weren't there. Now when I moved up to Pennsylvania, though, different story moving back in there, because then we had our local union when I was teaching at Delta Peach Bottom Elementary School. There it was. And that's when I got to join truly my local union and got to spend time, you know, and at that time we didn't have any reason to strike. The early 90s. Things were going well. I had a classroom of 17 fifth graders, unheard of at the time. I had left a classroom of 29 second graders. And so coming up into Pennsylvania, the rural Pennsylvania, getting 17, 15, you know, I had class sizes those years of anywhere from, you know, 18 down around 14. Wonderful, great working conditions. But why, Johnny? Because the local unions had insisted on small class sizes in the elementary schools very specifically. And I was the beneficiary then as a teacher. And you know what, though, Johnny? People say, yeah, of course you were, Tim. You know who was truly the beneficiaries? The kids.
Absolutely.
The kids in those classrooms. And that makes me think, too, one of my union heroes, Karen Lewis, Chicago Teachers Union, got to spend a lot of time with her before she got sick down in there. She did a lot of the organizing with us in the opt-out. But she was always pointing out to me, Tim, what we do at the Chicago Teachers Union is we always lead with how are we advocating and bargaining for making conditions better for the kids first. What we do as a teachers union is we advocate for the conditions that create teaching and learning opportunities that are spectacular. And that's what we're talking about when we're saying teachers union. Why do we have teachers union? Yes, there are salaries and things in that involved, but the conditions of the classroom, and the conditions of the classroom are the conditions in which children and families and communities either thrive and or get very stifled.
Yeah, Tim, and I'll also add on to that. It's more than just the conditions. It's to weigh in with a professional voice, to be able to say, hey, we are experts in how children learn and what they need to learn. But this is kind of like, for instance, excessive high stakes testing today.
Right.
Like, as a collective voice, we could say this is not helpful to the learner. We can't do this because there are human limitations and to what you can do as a teacher. So right. By and large, it's also to have a professional voice with some weight, some political power. I brought that up before. Mm-hmm. It says, as a group, we're going to apply our best knowledge of our profession of teaching to say these are not helping children learn, right? Mm-hmm. And they're making it so that it's not connected to the teaching emphasis that we know to be good teaching, right? So it's really also weighing in on the trade, saying like, here are the conventions. Here are the best practices of teaching. That ought not to be decided by who's designing and selling tests or who's providing extra curriculum materials. It's to say, hey, you know what? Teacher autonomy, teacher voice collectively and individually matters. And so that's a big function to historically of unions. And I just want to throw it out there. It's Labor Day. If you're not in a union, but you're a laborer, me too, man, like big prop, because you can't have a democracy without good labor, right? So you might not be in a union. That's not us saying like, what's wrong with you? Go find a union job, right? But we really need that, okay?
Yeah, it's Busted Pencils. It's Fully Leaded Education Talk. It is special Labor Day episode. Remembering our family's roots connected in Detroit and Pittsburgh, and then as ourselves as teachers.
Being every classroom teachers. We're in, right? Yeah. Every classroom we're in. Oh, there it is. That's the bell. You know what that bell means, Tim? Listener, I know our listeners know. That's the Democracy in Action bell. Every day here on Busted Pencils, we take a minute to recognize a core democratic value and where that core democratic value is being put to practice. Today, I want to recognize every educator out there, everyone working in a school, not just the teachers, especially you teachers, but everybody contributing to the hard labor of getting the classrooms ready, of starting school this week, next week, right? It's happening. They're learning everywhere. Teachers are teaching. And you know what's really important about our public schools, Tim, is that that is labor that supports the core democratic value of the pursuit of happiness.
There you go.
Right? Every citizen can find happiness in his or her own way, right? They can have it their way so long as they don't step on the rights of others. This is something every teacher and every laborer in a school is contributing to, that young people, no matter who they are, where they are, what their social conditions are that they're born into. Tim, you brought that up last week in the show, right? About, you know, I think last Monday you were talking about socioeconomics, those determinant factors and the success of our students, but really pursuit of happiness. Every time you're making it possible for a kid to be a learner in your school, whether that's you're serving food to a kid, whether that's you're monitoring to make sure that their recess and their play is safe, whether you're helping out, you know, in the library, getting the books on the shelves for kids, or whether you're in the classroom teaching, every single person laboring in schools is contributing to that young person's right to a pursuit of happiness. More core democratic value than that, Tim.
Nothing more than that. Happiness sounds kind of joyful, Johnny Lupinacci. It's Busted Pencils, Fully Leaded Education Talk. Educated educators talking education. I see I got a little smile out of Jess on the joyful there. Do you like that, Jess?
I did.
You know, just remembering. It's just like, keep going on that. You know, I again, referring to the Democratic National Convention.
Well, there's a lot of energy right now, right?
There's still a lot of energy, a lot of pep. And in fact, you know, talking about Labor Day today, you know, there was news here too of Tim Walz addressing the firefighters union, and because they have not endorsed yet, and he was out there making, guess what, a very joyful presentation that was, you know, again, is he courting the vote of the firefighters union? Absolutely he is. Why wouldn't he be? That's what they're doing. When you think about, too, as we're coming into this election season here, back to school, Labor Day, September now, hey, it's coming up quickly. Making sure that, you know, recognizing if you are in a union, what are you thinking about? There is the politically oriented organizing, too, of unions, because they do have the ability to truly get out the vote and make a difference. You know, Johnny, and I remember this too, and this is going to be a little bit of a critique of our own teachers union, because it's to say, as a union member, you can't disagree. Yes, you can. Yes, well, you can. And in fact, you made this point.
Should.
You should. In fact, you know, during the No Child Left Behind era of high stakes testing like that, one of the reasons for it getting such a foothold was that the national teachers unions caved on that teaching issue. They caved on that issue and allowed for that to come in. And there were quite a few of us at that time, very, very vocal with our own teachers union leadership to say, wait a minute, if we're talking about what's best for kids, how did you guys agree with this? And they said, well, during the, you know, negotiations, it was a place where they had to give. But pointing this out and saying, we as union members internally pushed back very hard during that No Child Left Behind high stakes testing race to the top era on union leadership, teachers union leadership, to say, wait a minute, if you're going to be representing what's the best conditions for kids, families, communities, and teachers, high stakes testing ain't it. You know, hey, people would say, doesn't sound like you guys won that fight at all, Tim. Maybe we didn't at this point. We know that. But again, just to point out the whole idea that, you know, if you're in a union, you lose your voice. Not true. Not true at all, Johnny Lupinacci.
Yeah, absolutely, Tim. And it reminds me, last week, you know, every week we have a theme, 20 lessons from the 20th century. And last week we declared this week's theme to be practice corporal politics. And this unions couldn't be a better example of that, right? So when we think about it, like an erosion of democracy is a rise of a tyrannical power, right? Of tyranny. And what that wants us to do is to soften in our chairs, to get, you know, indifferent to the emotional aspects of our work and our labor, the passion that goes into it. So practicing corporal politics reminds us to get out, get outside, join that joy, that energy you're talking about, not only supporting a political initiative, but your workplace, your community, the quality of things. Put your body together with other people, make friends, you know, meet unfamiliar folks and march with them, you know, stand for something. So practice corporal politics. That's a theme. And Tim, that just reminded me, like, unions structure that for us. Mm. They remind us that, like, hey, we got to get together and talk about the conditions and how we can make things better. Right.
Man, Johnny Lupinacci, somebody's listening going, wait a minute. Did Johnny just say corporal punishment?
No. Politics.
No.
Politics of the body, Tim. Politics.
I know. Just to make sure, pointing that out.
Sitting in our chair, not right. Just sitting in your chair, not just scrolling through, you know, endless reels of content, but actually getting outside with people, like being outside in the elements, visible and together, not just with the people you talk to every day, but with new people.
Corporeal in one sense, and the difference in the spelling there, in case anybody's listening and going, wait a minute, no, not corporal, corporeal. Again, though, both, yeah, dealing with the body. Johnny Lupinacci, 20 from the 20th. It's Busted Pencils. It's fully leaded education talk. We are educated educators talking education, blue collar scholars all the time, but very specifically today on Labor Day, pointing that out. Again, lots of history, lots of connections, our own family roots. And I said, you know, watching this time, though, Johnny, I wonder what, you know, you address, you know, the teachers union. When teachers go on strike, this is an issue, right, where you come up and say, wait a minute, if you guys are for the kids, if you guys are for the communities, I don't understand a teacher strike. How can teachers realistically, humanly, go out on strike when strikes mean kids can't go to school? And you guys are always talking about the fact that, you know, in school, these are some of the places that that certain kids only eat unless they're going to school, that there is safety in the schools. And you mean to tell me, teachers, you're going to talk about that all that time, and then all of a sudden when it comes time to get a little bit more vacation time or another planning period, you're going to go on strike at the pain and suffering of those children? Johnny, that's a strong political argument for kind of pushing people in a direction to go, well, yeah, I didn't realize that teachers' unions would intentionally hurt kids. I'm just thinking about, as we come into this, how do we help people talk and reason and get the sense of going, hey, wait a minute, you know what? The idea of a strike, what does it mean for an organization of workers together to come together to say, wait a minute, enough's enough. We're going to, quote, stop work. And when that stop work happens, what are the consequences? And particularly in teachers' unions, man, it gets really, really nasty, because that's the first things. I thought you guys cared about kids. I thought you guys cared about kids. I know, Johnny, we're coming into the break there, but I can see you, man. You want to burst through.
Well, no, Tim, I mean, I just really like this whole conversation, and it's so great and it's important to have. And I just can't wait to keep having it here at Busted Pencils.
That's Busted Pencils. Yeah. Labor Day special, man. One more. Hold on tight.
Oh, listening to the Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's home for Up North News Radio.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Today's U.S. Bowling League Day. I am not in a bowling league. I think that would actually be kind of fun.
Oh, yeah.
I do like to bowl. But
you got the bowling shirt going on tonight there, Pete.
I do have the bowling shirt. In case the game breaks out, I'm ready. Because I was raised, I'm a street bowler, Chris. I'm ready in case a game breaks out. It could happen.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Most people out here think that taking care of one another is important. And most people would step up for a neighbor going through a tough time. Most people around here help out friends and family when they need it. But the funny thing is, most of us won't look for help when we need it. Talk to someone if you're struggling with mental health. Because most people out here really care. Find more information at loveyourmindtoday.org. That's loveyourmindtoday.org. Brought to you by the Huntsman Mental Health Institute and the Ad Council.
This is the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Educated educators talking education. Labor Day special episode. Johnny Lupinacci, Dr. Tim Slecker coming at you. Little union remembering families in Detroit and Pittsburgh, early roots connected to it. Then teachers, unions, and then, man, just a whole lot of stuff. History in there, connections to Chicago Teachers Union. Johnny talking about the early days there and the formation, and then me and my connection to the late great Karen Lewis, president of Chicago Teachers Union. One of my just mentors, loved her and her work, and she just really was able to kind of put that forward in a way that nobody else can. Johnny, though, thinking about this though too, it's like, you know, so one of the things that happen with unions is occasionally they go on strike because, you know what, we couldn't get what was supposed to be, you know, in a teacher's sense, you know, we couldn't get, you know, planning periods. We weren't able to get small class sizes. We weren't able. And at this point, we're going to strike. And there's always the rhetoric coming back going, well, you teachers unions, you guys really don't care about kids, because if you did, you wouldn't go out on strike. Well, powerful argument. I do want to say, though, in the late 70s, when my school district went out on strike, in the winter, we went to school for the first 9 weeks, and then right around October, our teachers decided to go out on strike, and we stayed out on strike, and I was off that entire winter of my seventh grade year, and I tell you what, it was the best winter ever for me, because, man, I got to play some hockey like you couldn't believe, man, every day on the pond down there ice skating. I was like, man, this is great. However, though, I think about that and go, like, during that time, though, there were, you know, friends and of other students of mine who probably didn't have that luxury of being able to, you know, while my teachers were on strike, being able to take care of myself. And so talking to somebody who says, yeah, you know, there are certain kids out there that a strike is harmful to them. How do we talk about that, Johnny?
Well, Tim, first, I want to back up a little bit about this, because I know it's an important thing to tease out. It's probably takes more than the segment of a daily Busted Pencil show. But in short, in summary, strike is a last resort.
Exactly.
And it often gets a lot of attention because of the nature of its last resort. But ideally, there's all kinds of negotiation that's taking place. Yet what happens is it culminates to it's not being heard, it's not being listened to, and compromise is not even where we're at between labor and management, if we want to break it down into those terms. Right. And so what happens is you get news headlines, you get conversations and discussions that are all part of that. This is a last resort. It's sort of like everyone wants to talk about the violence of, you know, like, of war, or the extreme point of when something culminates to there not being a solution to any group of people who is not listened to, right? They have to be able to say, if you don't listen, there is a consequence. And right. So it culminates, and there is a whole, like, procedure to last resort. Mm-hmm. So we don't often talk about that. And it gets the most attention, like, oh, if you got a union, then they're going to strike. It's like, no, then you have to keep the negotiations going. You have to be listening and you have to be really mindful to that. We have to come together. We have to be, you know, listening to and supporting one another from management and in labor. And so strikes are absolutely last resort. And do they draw attention to the issues? They absolutely do. Mm-hmm. Right. And no union. I don't know a single union, because remember, it's collectively decided that you strike, that decides, hey, we're just going to strike. It's mm-hmm. like about the boy who cried wolf. You don't get the tantrum. You don't get to, like, you know, launch a bomb at the first time you don't get your way. And a strike is a bomb.
Yeah.
And so it's a very serious thing. But what is important is that if we're teaching about the mechanism of negotiation, if you're not being listened to, if you're completely being ignored, that you do have power as a community to say, then we are not going to provide this service. And you absolutely need this service. So you will listen to us.
Yeah.
So that's absolutely important. It's only after being listened to. And it's effective. And that's why it gets propaganda. Like, there is a large group of, I would say, media outlets that cover it as though, like, some selfish group of laborers or teacher wants to hurt kids. It doesn't hurt kids. It hurts everybody. Things stop. And that is why we get to quick resolutions when we have them. Everybody ideally wants to be providing the services, but we absolutely cannot, and we're not being listened to. And so thus we are exercising our right to say enough. Things stop until we figure this out, usually because things are unsafe, because they are dangerous, or they are unacceptable. And that's really important responsibility. Now, super fast, Tim, because we talked about, does it hurt? It only hurts if we don't come together as a community,
right?
Support a strike. And so it's a lot of work that labor. That's why I said, practice the kind of politics where you get to know people. When the nurses say they're going on strike, they're not getting paid. So we go to help support our nurses who provide an essential service to our community, make sure they're fed, make sure they're housed, make sure we support it. Meanwhile, we don't have healthcare without them. So make sure that the powers that be understand that we need to get to a resolution, and a resolution quick. Same thing for teaching. So if kids aren't going to school, families aren't able to go to work, and the pressure is on that, hey, you need to start listening. Ideally, we don't have to have frequency of strikes if the open lines of communication are flowing and people are practicing democracy. You know where we learn to do that? In school. So ideally, that's what we're doing. So remember, if you're a teacher, teach the importance of the labor you're doing. Talk about these things not as bad things, but as sometimes when our voice isn't heard, then it culminates to that. And the community comes together to figure out how we can go forward. I mean, everyone listening, there's times you got to just stop what's going on at home and say, everybody on our
hold reason. On.
I know, as a parent, sometimes I have to say, hey, we got to clean around here. We got to stop doing, like, we got to have some, we got to get back to how we all live together, and things stop until we figure it out. You figure it out pretty quickly and you move forward. So I like to spin it as a more positive thing, Tim.
And I'm glad that's what you know, you put it out there too, is to say strike is that last thing. And again, the ability to get, how do you get there? Well, Johnny, you know, you're talking about, where do we learn to compromise, to make discussions in schools? And guess what? Another place? Busted Pencils, man. We're always here Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. You're always welcome to call us too and jump in and talk more about everything that's going on. Can't wait to see y'all. Have a great Labor Day. See you tomorrow.
You're listening to WBZH, Hayward's home for the Todd Allbald Show.
Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome author, comedian Roger Rittenhouse, who will discuss his new book, Big Techs, and Tim Sowers from the Overture Center in Madison drops by to discuss their upcoming slate.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, weeknights from 6 till 8. Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Today's U.S. Bowling League Day. I am not in a bowling league. I think that would actually be kind of fun.
Oh, yeah.
I do like to bowl. But
you got the bowling shirt going on tonight there, Pete.
I do have the bowling shirt. In case the game breaks out, I'm ready. Because I was raised, I'm a street bowler, Chris. I'm ready in case a game breaks out. It could happen.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram. This is the Buzz of the North. WBZH 910 AM, W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.